Hello and welcome into this Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host, for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity, hoping you are having a great day. Whenever and wherever you may be listening, if you are amongst those on Facebook Live this morning, catching this live, good to have you along. Thanks for playing along. If you're listening via podcast at some other time, thanks for being there. Thanks for subscribing. And please share with your friends. Let them know what you're listening to. They might enjoy it if they're your friends, because you do obviously have good taste. It is Thursday, the second day of July, 2020. And a quick housekeeping reminder, no podcast tomorrow. No live show tomorrow because I'm taking the day off. It's the 4th of July weekend. My wife is off work tomorrow. We are going to, as far as I know, sleep late and be bums. That's about the size of it. Just because we have a 3-day weekend, we're going to take advantage of having that 3 days and just unplug and take it easy for a couple of days. Something we need to do. And just so you know, no podcast, no live broadcast tomorrow, okay? All right. Now, what else is there? Before we get rolling into things, and it's funny how things pile up. I was struggling to find things that I thought were relatable for this morning. Yesterday, I was going through things, looking at stuff, and thinking, wow, it's just going to be slim pickings, because after a while, it's just like we're all beating the same drum. It's hard to find unique things to talk about, But that ends up changing as the day goes on, and eventually it just snowballs. So now I'm looking at a list of things. I've got about 8 to 10 things here that I know I won't get to all of it. It's just not going to happen. But I'm gonna throw a couple of things at you before the break, because in the absurdity section I have to throw something at you. Okay, let's see. Before we go there. I got word yesterday that my set of gaskets and seals for the Miata are coming in, and I'll be working on that beginning today. In fact, as soon as I get through with this, I don't have anything else pending. So when we get through today and I get the podcast processed, uploaded, show notes online, I'll be heading to the garage and beginning to disassemble the Miata for the project ahead. And that involves draining the cooling system, draining the oil, taking the radiator and fans out, and taking the hood off the car. And pretty much that's kind of the goal for today. I just need to make sure I get those things done today. And if I get to that point and I can, not being interrupted, not being called into other things, because that could happen, because there's some stuff that's kind of hanging that may actually interrupt my 3-day weekend, to be honest with you. But unless I get a phone call or a text saying something else has happened that I need to tend to, then I'll be diving in to the Miata project. I just think I'm going to start calling it that, the Miata project. So the goal in the end is to pull the cylinder head, to replace the valve stem guides, to completely clean and all of the joins, and to replace all the seals and gaskets for the top end of the motor, put it all back together again, and hope it stops burning oil. I know it's losing oil, too, because the backside of the motor is covered in oil, and I know exactly where it's coming from, and one of the seals that's coming is to fix that problem. So, who knows? By this time next week, I may have it all back. I hope to have it all back together again and running. And to be able to give you a good report that Little Smokey is no longer Little Smokey, I can resume calling him Zoomy again. We'll see. But that's just that. And that's just personal. And I just mention it because I've been talking about it. And I just feel like I need to update you like you care. Oh, my gosh. Let's see. I've got a couple of things I want to dive into here before we go any further. First up, something I just stumbled across, and I'm gonna make sure that I get in the show notes right now before I go any further. Okay, there is that. So I want to make sure you get this in show notes today. The great one, Mark Levin, has posted something to Twitter, and he did so in the last half hour. And it's a series of six tweets, and I felt like I needed to share it with you today. It begins, "It can no longer be said that the Democrat Party is not Marxist. The only debate is how deep its Marxism runs. Black Lives Matter is an openly Marxist anti-American group. There's no denying it. And it is fully embraced by the Democrat Party and its media and cultural surrogates. Disrespecting the flag and national anthem at major sporting events, mobs incited to pull down statues indiscriminately, destroy the lives and careers of those who do not capitulate, attack free speech, attack academic freedom, attack law enforcement, denounce society as systemically racist and systemically unequal, systemically unjust, etc. Brainwashing of school-age children, violence throughout, and so forth, are all elements of a Marxist movement intent on destroying our existing civil society in every way possible. This is not only what the election is about, it is what the next several decades of life in America are about. That is, those of us who believe in America are in a life struggle with those who seek to destroy it." And again, "The Democrat Party, now effectively controlled by Marxist Bernie Sanders, is the vessel through which much of their agenda will receive support and cover." And that is from Twitter, from Mark Levin. And he's right. I would add, where he mentions Bernie Sanders, that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her little bunch of leftist revolutionaries are also in that mix. They're helping Bernie Sanders, as are many others in the Democrat Party. They are now overtly anti-American. Well, Mark, how can you say that? I can say that because they are proving it daily. They are proving it daily by stepping out and proposing things for this country which are harmful to the way of life we know as American. They are advocating the destruction of the United States of America as we know it. And it is something that you and I need to be very aware of. And we need to pay close attention as things unfold on a daily basis. Social justice is one of the aspects of what they're doing. There's a lot of terminology that they're using, and that brings me to the next little item I want to get into in this first segment, because this is absurdity at work, but it's damaging, dangerous absurdity. From the Patriot Post, Thomas Gallatin writes, "The social justice cultural revolutionaries change the definitions of words to confuse and confound. We need to have a conversation about ... fill in any myriad of leftist social justice causes. It's a popular tactic used by today's woke culture that means precisely the opposite of what is suggested. As Stephen Hayward at Powerline puts it, what we need is a conversation means in practice is you shut up and agree with the left. Or in the parlance of the Princess Bride's Inigo Montoya.
That's the fact, Jack!
No, that's not what he said. He says,
you keep using the word. I do not think it means what you think it means.
This Orwellian tactic of subtly redefining words and terms is not new, but it has proven highly effective in both confusing people and intentionally conflating issues. It's the same tactic used by Black Lives Matter. As we have repeatedly noted, if BLM was truly concerned about ending violence against black lives, then why the objection to focusing on the biggest causes of violence and injustice against blacks in America? The disproportionately high crime rate in black neighborhoods, almost entirely perpetrated by other blacks. And abortion, which takes exponentially more black lives than any other single factor. It's impossible to take a complaint or grievance seriously when those espousing it don't actually mean what they're saying. Once again, the BLM movement is not really about bettering the lives of black Americans, but about pushing a neo-Marxist revolution. Yet another example of this leftist wordplay is the term inclusion. This one is especially popular when a school, organization, or business seeks to justify its discussion or its decision to dismiss or cancel an individual or relationship with someone with the wrong opinion. How many times have we seen the self-contradictory statement, so-and-so was expelled or fired because they failed to uphold our school or company's commitment to diversity and inclusion? Logically, if leftists claim to be committed to inclusion, then how could they exclude anyone? The simple answer is that, in the left's lexicon, inclusion refers not to a commitment to accept all individuals, but rather to promote the exclusive idea that only the left's views are just and virtuous. In the end, the rallying motto for conservatives concerned with upholding principles of truth and consistency in language might be, accurate definitions matter. For without a commitment to consistently accurate definitions, there can be no genuine conversations and no hope for unalloyed unity. He's absolutely right about this, you know. They use words which don't mean what you think they mean. And Inigo Montoya was correct.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
We are told to reimagine police. Yeah, reimagine law enforcement. Have you noticed that lately? They want us to reimagine. Do a scan of news stories about the topic of defunding police. And what you will see again and again, repeated by different faces in different boxes on different news channels during the talking head news shows, and you will see and hear that phrase, we're imagining what law enforcement means. We're reimagining this. We're reimagining. They're reimagining, and they're all reading from the same playbook. Do you recognize what's going on? They're using words that you and I understand because we were educated. We grew up responsibly. We used dictionaries. We were taught the meanings of words before the social justice warriors took over the education system. So we understand what having a conversation about something really means. It means us sitting down face to face and talking something out. Rationally, reasonably, peacefully. That's not what the left means when they say we need to have a conversation about something. As the article says, it means you shut up and agree with us. This is also the same as bipartisanship. When you hear politicians say we're seeking a bipartisan solution, if it is a leftist politician on the news saying, we wish the Republicans would join us in a bipartisan solution to this problem, what they actually mean is, we wish the Republicans would shut up, stop objecting, and just vote with us to get this passed. Because we don't care about their objections, we just need their votes. And that's what this means. Bipartisanship, for the past decade, has not meant people working together, compromising to reach a goal which is a solution which is acceptable by everyone. Bipartisanship means shut up and play along, or you just sit in your corner, we don't need your input anyway, as in the case of the House of Representatives today. Because the House of Representatives is controlled by the Democrats, the leftists, the Marxists. And they regularly exclude Republicans from discussions on matters, votes on matters, meetings on things. They don't care about anybody else's input. They won. They're in control. You shut up and go sit in your corner. And that's what bipartisanship means. So, Inigo Montoya, as I said, is right.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
He doesn't mean that. But to the left, he doesn't matter. It will mean whatever they need it to mean today in order to persuade those who don't use critical thinking, but have been taught what to think. Not how to think, but what to think. And that's what's produced what Mark Levin was talking about, the rise of Marxism in the Democrat Party. They are no longer hiding who and what they are. It is very plain for everyone to see. Everyone paying attention understands. The Democrats are the Marxist Party. They just use different words to disguise themselves. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here. Good to have you along. No, you're not having deja vu. The computer has picked the same bumper tunes it picked yesterday. That's weird, my man. I'm just saying. We're going to have a talk over the weekend. I've tried threats. It doesn't seem to be working. Oh, well, anyway, moving forward, if I can, or maybe I should just crab sideways. How about that? Maybe I should just go eat my snack and just let the music run. I don't know. It is the second day of July 2020. We're heading into a 4th of July weekend, and I hope, as I said yesterday, I hope you have access to a good fireworks show this weekend. You can go someplace and watch some things go boom in the sky. And listen to everybody go, ooh, ooh, ah, that was awesome. Because you need to. You know what I mean? You just need to. That's part of America. That celebration of the greatest nation on the face of the earth. And that's where you live, in case you forgot. Because all you see on the news is how bad things are. Please remember that the news media thrives on sensationalism. Sensationalism drives everything they do. The more sensational, the more attention they give it. And if they can't find new sensational stuff, they just keep beating the drum on old sensational stuff. If you recall, the Malaysian airliner a few years ago was pretty much all CNN talked about for a while. Every time you turned on CNN, they had the latest break on the Malaysian airliner. Nothing new here, but they had to talk about it because it was the most sensational thing they could talk about. And today, it's all about destroying a president because they can manufacture sensationalism from nothing and use it against the sitting president because the sitting president won an election. They predicted he could never win. Mm-mm-mm. I don't know about you, but from time to time, I don't watch the Tucker Carlson show on Fox News every night. I just don't. There are other things going on. But I do a couple of times a week, and I try to hit the Wednesday show because, is it the Wednesday show? Yeah, it's the Wednesday show because Mark Stein drops in. He's only there for 5 or 6 minutes, but it's usually insightful. It's usually funny. And sometimes, on rare occasions, Mark Stein is not happy.
To answer that question, we're joined by our old friend, Mark Stein. Good to see you, Mark. Are you concerned they're going to get rid of more stuff?
Good to see you too, Tucker. Yeah, I this is why I should preface everything I say by you said a couple of days ago that the Republicans are the only alternative to the complete Biden AOC takeover. So we got to drag this sorry, worthless bunch across the finish line in November. But I must say, I didn't think it would be possible to despise Republican senators any more than I do. But these two guys surrendering Columbus, you know, with conservatives like this, who needs Marxist Lenin? Violent anarchist Antifa types on the street. When you meet lunatics halfway, it makes you a lunatic too. I actually would like to replace Groundhog Day with Republican Senator Day, when the senator emerges from the Senate and accidentally sees his backbone, but then goes back inside for the next 6 years and never gives it another thought. These guys don't understand that unless you're willing to surrender everything, you better surrender nothing, because they're only going to come back for more.
The paradox here, and there are so many, by the way, I should say I know both these senators, and they're both smart, and they both routinely make conservative noises. But contrast what they did today with what Joe Biden, who is a left-winger to the extent he has any views at all, and certainly a puppet of radicals. But I think Biden has not called for getting rid of Columbus. And yet two Republican senators have. They're woker than the Democratic nominee. How does that work?
Well, I think that's exactly the problem here. People are pining for an alternative to what they see on the streets. In France, President Macron, whom I regard as a ridiculous, dinky, dweeby, metrosexual, globalist nothing, has nevertheless come out and said, no, you're not taking one statue, we're not changing a single street name. You can go to hell, it's an old part of our history. That guy has actually got more backbone than the Republican Party. Some big shot Ayatollah in Iran, I forget, it's not the Supreme Ayatollah, but it's like the Deputy Assistant Under Supreme Ayatollah of Iran. He said today, this is fantastic. 40 years ago, it was just Iranians saying death to America. Now you switch on the TV and in Atlanta and Minneapolis and Portland and Seattle, there are thousands of Americans in effect saying death to America. He gets it. These people are at war with the American idea. So the Republican response is to propose a holiday 2 weeks before July the 4th that would in effect become the rival and would be touted as the rival to July the 4th. So every Juneteenth, that's when you'd have all the celebrities. They'd be having the big parades and July the 4th would wither and die. If this is conservatism, if this is the Republican Party, then for God's sake, just get out of the way. We'll drag you across the finish line in November, but at least let us call you the worthless, contemptible, nothing, slug, dead husk party as we do so.
Wow.
Sorry, I'm getting a little worked up here, Tucker.
No, I think you have every right to. I mean, I think all of us feel imperiled right now, threatened, because we are. And the people we voted for and send money to in order to protect us have joined the other side. I just have to ask you about the question of Juneteenth. So I think most people familiar with American history would say emancipation is one of the great moments in the entire 240 years of America. Why are the people who say they support Juneteenth against the person who made emancipation possible, Abraham Lincoln? They're tearing down a statue as they're demanding a Juneteenth holiday. That doesn't make any sense at all.
Because it's about inflicting damage on the existing American order. So if you mean emancipation in the form of the Lincoln statue that was taken down in Boston, they're happy to see it go. Emancipation doesn't mean anything to them. The Juneteenth holiday is going to be the anti-July the 4th holiday. And actually, as far as Republicans are concerned, I think Republican senators should have their own Emancipation Day for the Wednesday after the Tuesday night election when they are emancipated from their entire campaign platform and don't have to pretend they're tough on immigration, tough on crime, tough on China, and can just go back to being worthless jelly spy nothings for the next 6 years. Emancipation Day for Republican senators, first Wednesday in November.
I'd like to see them emancipated from control of their donors. That might help.
Wow.
Mark Stein, thank you for that perspective. Great to see you tonight.
Mark Stein on with Tucker Carlson last night. And he has a lot to contribute there, and you can tell he's focused on the whole Juneteenth thing. And he brought up an angle that I actually hadn't thought about before, and that is that the placement of Juneteenth to be celebrated as a national holiday is just a few weeks before our National Independence Day, the 4th of July. And those who are pushing, hard pushing, at Juneteenth becoming a national holiday are the same people who are condemning the United States of America for everything it stands for. And so it's just a matter of time until these same people want us to stop celebrating the 4th of July and the independence of America. Because as you have seen for the past few months, people in the streets screaming, yelling, and their little friendly pundits on the talking head news shows talking about how America was founded as a racist nation. And it is part of the DNA of this country, racism. And slavery, built upon slavery. And other convenient liberal leftist lies. Those are lies. Just make sure you understand those are lies. Not one smidgen of truth to be found in their lies. Remember, we find these truths. Remember, God created all men equal. All men are created are equal. All men. Not just one color or another. Not just people with this hair, skin tone or that hair color. All. The word all. They set the stage for abolishing slavery. They set the stage for ending the scourge of human ownership. Yeah, some of them were born into families that owned slaves. Some had slaves at points in their lives. Why? Because back then, it was normal. But they didn't want it to be normal. And they ended it. All men. So the day we should be celebrating is the day for all men, not just some. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast for this Thursday, the second day of July, 2020. I'm glad you're along for the ride today. I made a reference to the Declaration of Independence in the last segment, and I thought, you know what, why not look that up? We're going into Independence Day this weekend, and I want to share with you the first three paragraphs, just the first three paragraphs. Because I think these first three paragraphs are extremely important. And a lot of people really, really don't understand the foundation of our country. They don't understand the reason we declared our independence from Great Britain. They don't understand the thinking of the men who gathered together to craft the founding documents for our nation. And these first three paragraphs will set the stage so you understand. It is much longer, please. And I will put the... hang on here. Let me do something. Just give me just a sec here and get up here to find... Okay, that's it. Copy. I'm gonna put this in today's show notes because I want you to see with your own eyes. I want you to look this up and to read it for yourself, because who knows, there's a chance you may never have seen these words. And this is from the Encyclopedia Britannica. It's not from some crusty old parchment with handwriting that's hard to read. So you can read this very easily. So let's dive into this, okay? This is what this segment's going to end up being. It was going to be something else, but now that's maybe bumped to segment four. Here we go. When, in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume, among the powers of the earth, the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. By these first three paragraphs, you can see that the founders of our nation separated us from Great Britain because, well, of many, many reasons which are listed in the remainder of the document. And you need to go read the entire thing to understand all of the transgressions, all of the things that they pointed out. These are the reasons we're separating ourselves from the crown and declaring ourselves an independent nation. And it goes on and on and on. All of the different things that the crown has done to these people. And they finally said, that's it. We're done. And when you look at this, especially these first three paragraphs, you understand these people believed that all men are created equal. They didn't say some men. They didn't say land-owning men. They didn't say businessmen. They didn't say men who work in the fields. They didn't say white men or red men or any specific kind. They said all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. All men, not just some. Among those rights are life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. And that governments are set up for the purpose of securing those rights. And they derive the power to do that from the consent of those who are governed. That's you and I. They do what they do with our consent, and only with our consent. If they don't have our consent, they can't do these things. If we are to look deeply into, if we look deeply into what our government is doing today, we will find they're doing things we don't approve of. Not just you and I, but also your liberal friends. They would not approve of many of the things our government is doing. They just don't know what's going on. They're focused on the lies they're being told by the Marxists, and they're all up in arms about the lies. They're not seeing things from the perspective of those of us who understand the intent of the founders. Everyone created equal. Not just some, but all. Everyone endowed by their creator with certain rights which cannot be separated from us. These rights are endowed to us not by government, but by our creator. Government exists because we wish for it to exist, and it acts because we wish for it or give it the permission to act. And that is the nature of government in the eyes of those who founded this nation. When you contrast these three paragraphs with what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders, Rashida Tlaib, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, with what they embrace, you realize very, very quickly that what these leftists in the Democrat Party love and wish to implement in this country has nothing to do with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and operating as an institution by the graces of those they govern. I've told you many, many times that progressives, leftists, liberals, believe they are morally and intellectually superior. And by that, I mean they think you are too stupid to govern yourself. So there needs to be an elite class of people who sits in their hallowed halls in Washington, D.C., and makes decisions for the good of the governed. Because the governed can't handle things themselves. And that definition holds fast. It applies. It works. When you look at how leftists govern, they ignore the will of the people because they don't think the people are bright enough to understand life and how to live it and how to manage. And I'll be honest with you, they may not be far off in some cases because, frankly, you and I both know there are some people in our lives who really need to have a parent with them at all times. And they're adults. They make some dumb decisions, and then they blame the outcome of those dumb decisions on everybody but themselves. They're childish. But by and large, most people, thinking people, rational, reasonable, adult thinking people, look at what our government is doing today, and they realize they're out of control. And sadly, a lot of those people just turn off the news and ignore everything. Not just now and then to clear their heads and to walk away and regain their sanity, but they just stop paying attention. Because it's also insane, they choose not to deal with it, rather than to raise their voices and let their representatives know, no, you won't do that. All men created equal, endowed by their creator, not by government, with certain unalienable rights. Among those rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And governments are instituted among men to secure those rights. And those governments derive their powers, the just powers, from the consent of those of us they govern. We allow them to do things, and that's how they work. This is why even the leftists say, we serve the people, because they know that's what the people have been taught, even though they don't connect the dots. They say, we're here to serve. And those of us who are paying attention, those of us who are adults, right-thinking, rational, reasonable, thinking adults, we're watching, we're paying attention, and we realize, no, they're not. They are not here for the people. They're here for their interests. Among other things, they're building massive wealth. They're getting extremely wealthy. They're living in mansions outside of their districts. They don't live with their people, among their people. They're living the rock star life. They go out and enjoy the applause and the adoration of those who blindly follow them. But they don't live among them. They don't really work among them. They can't relate to them. And because of that, they're disconnected from them. And that's because they believe they should be. They believe they should be separated from the unwashed masses. They wholeheartedly believe they are the elite, that they are morally and intellectually superior, and they are needed. It's a very sad thing, and it's worlds away from deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. It's worlds away from realizing that those unalienable rights are endowed by a creator and not them. And you and I, our responsibility is to remind them of that every day. And here we go. jumping feet first into the final segment of this Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Quick reminder, no podcast tomorrow, no Facebook Live tomorrow. Taking the day off. Gonna unplug. Yeah. Facebook will, they'll mute this part later today. Come on now.
Hand me down the walking cane, hand me down my hat.
All right, well, let's not let that happen. I've got three stories here about COVID-19. I'm not going to get to any of them. I just want you to know that. I'm going to include all of them in today's show notes. There will be a bonus content section in today's show notes. In fact, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4... I've gotten through four stories. There are 7 more. I'll put those in the bonus section today. Okay? The ones I don't get to. There's one here that I'm going to get to. And I want you to see the stuff about COVID-19. Because the news media is talking about new cases. The level of testing we have right now is light years beyond what we had when all of this started. We have testing out the wazoo, which is why we're seeing so many new cases. That's the primary reason. You combine that with opening the doors, opening states, and allowing people to get out, and people are making contact, even with masks. And that's another thing. I'll leave you to decide about masks. But even with masks, people are still spreading, catching, and experiencing the coronavirus. But it's not as severe as it was before. Those who do end up in the hospital aren't staying for as long as they were before. And the number of cases, the number of deaths we have before is at an all-time low. So the fatality rate, when you adjust all the numbers, is way less than 1%. It's like half of 1%. When you adjust for all of the numbers. But nobody is telling you that because that's not sensational enough for them. What's sensational is the prospect of death. And I even watched somebody this morning, early this morning, while we were draining the coffee pot, waking up, shaking the cobwebs from our head. And I sat there and I actually raised my eyebrows and couldn't believe that this person was actually saying what she was saying without being challenged. Talking about how much more deadly it is. It's a very real threat. The potential for death is there. And she was saying essentially what Dr. Fauci and others coming from the science side of things have been saying. They're focused on the nastiness, and they're not looking at the overall statistics and seeing what's really happening on the ground. They're looking at it from computer models and laboratory analysis, not what's really happening out in the real world. They're looking at the potential. And like we've said before here, the worst case scenarios never play out. Not when we're dealing with these people. This is why, you know, I did the story yesterday about the climatologist, the alarmist who apologized, because when he actually looked at the real numbers, he actually went beyond the little reports, reports that they publish, and looked out there to see how everything really did stack up, and realized, oh, it's not nearly as bad as we say it is. And that's the example for COVID-19. When you look at the real world, you get on the ground and see what's really happening, we really have flattened the curve. We're well past the danger zone. But what has just happened across America, everywhere? Governors and mayors have stepped up and said, nope, shutting everything down, requiring you to put masks on, you have to. And this has happened where I live. I could throw a rock and hit the next county from where I am. And that county is where Birmingham, Alabama is. It's Jefferson County. That's the name of the county. First, it was just the city limits of Birmingham. You have to wear a mask if you're in public. Doesn't matter where you are, what you're doing, you got to be wearing a mask. And then Jefferson County picked that up. You have to be wearing a mask. all of the businesses who were starting to see things recover, breathing a sigh of relief, employees being able to come back to work, are now having to shut back down again because of the panic, which goes against the grain of everything we're seeing on the ground. It's all about, oh, we better take care of everybody. If we save one life, you're not going to, trust me. There will be more damage from the shutdown, much more. Anyway, three stories about that in the show notes today. Make sure you take a look at those stories in today's show notes. They'll be available on Facebook as soon as I finish up this. They may be there now if you're listening to the podcast. Actually, they are there now if you're listening to the podcast. And at dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Now, you've heard about the Lincoln Project, right? These guys who were Republicans who were standing up and saying that Trump is an evil so-and-so and does not need to be in office, and we need to do everything possible to get rid of this guy because he's bad for America. They are the Never Trumpers, and they are the highest profile group of Never Trumpers. Well, mainstream media reporters are fond of lavishing praise on and treating with reverence any prominent Republican or former Republican who declares themselves to be a part of the Never Trump coalition. Words like principled and courageous are often tossed around when describing the work of the Never Trump leaders in the Lincoln Project PAC, the work they're doing in allegedly exposing President Trump as an inauthentic conservative. In reality, the story of the Lincoln Project PAC is far less noble and altruistic than the media makes it out to be. So much so that in the midst of the PAC's recent blitz of tweets and ads showcasing their disdain for Trump and support for presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden, the Conservative Club for Growth Action Group started a website focused on exposing the anti-Trump PAC columnist Miranda Devine, dubbed embittered former GOP grifters. Here's what the Club for Growth wrote in their announcement. Club for Growth Action announced the launch of a television advertisement and website, therealLincolnProject.com, exposing the Lincoln Project as nothing more than a Democratic front group. The Lincoln Project has nothing to do with principle and everything to do with lining the pockets of failed consultants by attacking conservatives, said Club for Growth Action President David McIntosh. While the club is the darling of the liberal media, the fact is that it's a Democrat front group and one of the least efficient ways for anti-Trumpers to spend their political dollars. Financial disclosures show that 90% of the Lincoln Project's donations go directly into their own pockets. The Lincoln Project has unsurprisingly made the jump from opposing President Trump to opposing conservatives and supporting liberals in key races across the country. The powerful video they put together starts off with clips from the Lincoln Project advisor Rick Wilson's infamous January 2020 Boomer Rube segment on CNN that had anchor Don Lemon doubling over in laughter while Wilson denigrated and mocked average American conservatives, and goes from there. Wilson was also recently exposed as a hypocrite on the issue of prominent displays of the Confederate flag after images were discovered on his Instagram page that featured a South Will Rise Again Confederate cooler. It brought a great deal of embarrassment to the Lincoln Project, who just a few weeks ago released an error-filled ad trying to shame President Trump for the people who fly Confederate flags at his rallies. Club for Growth isn't the only organization shining a brighter light on the inner workings of the George Conway-led Lincoln Project either. The Center for Responsive Politics looked into their finances and spending in May and filed this report. The Republican Super PAC has amassed a substantial war chest, but it has come under scrutiny for funneling money to its advisory board members and spending relatively little airing political ads to influence voters. The group also hides some of its vendors by stealthily paying subcontractors, making it difficult to follow the money. The Lincoln Project reported spending nearly $1.4 million through March. Almost all of that money went to the group's board members and firms run by them. The Super PAC spent nearly $1 million with Summit Strategic Communications, a firm run by the Lincoln Project treasurer, Reed Galen. Another $215,000 went to Tusk Digital, a company run by Lincoln Project advisor Ron Steslow. Both companies received little business from other federal committees since Trump's inauguration. There is more to this. It's in the show notes today. You need to read it. You need to understand that these people with the Lincoln Project and the ads you've been seeing lately are funded by a group of people who are taking the donations and spending a small portion of it on such ads, and the rest of it is going into their pockets. These people are grifters, they're liars, and they're thieves. And that's all for today. God bless you. Have a great fourth weekend. We'll see you back here Monday. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.